Welcome to a deep dive into Timmins v. Twin Cities Area New Party. This 1997 Supreme Court case might seem a bit niche at first glance. It's about something called fusion candidacies, but trust me, this case, it goes way beyond just one election law quirk. It really gets into how American democracy works, specifically how much power states have in shaping our political landscape.
Absolutely. This case really grapples with some big questions about the leeway states have in shaping their political landscapes. And also, you know, do these choices hinder smaller parties and their ability to compete?
Okay, so let's make sure everyone's on the same page before we dive into the legal arguments. What is a fusion candidacy? Some of our listeners might not be familiar.
Sure. So imagine a candidate who wants to appeal to voters from lots of different political perspectives, right? With a fusion candidacy, they can actually appear on the ballot under multiple party labels. So you might see their name next to the Democratic Party and a smaller third party, for example.
Interesting. So like a coalition building tactic on the ballot itself.
Exactly. And it's been a popular strategy for minor parties trying to gain a foothold. You know, it's a system that's obviously dominated by two major players. And in Timmins v. Twin Cities Area New Party, we're looking at a candidate, Andy Dawkins, who was nominated by both the Democratic Farmer Labor Party and the Twin Cities Area New Party in Minnesota back in 1994.
Okay, so we got a candidate with dual nominations. What's the problem?
Well, Minnesota had a state law, and it banned fusion candidacies. So the new party sued, and they claimed this violated their First Amendment rights, like specifically freedom of association. Their argument was, you know, hey, we should be able to support the candidate of our choice, right? Even if they're running under another party.
Makes sense. So a clash between state power and the rights of political parties. Did this go straight to the Supreme Court?
Not exactly, no. It actually went through a little bit of a journey first. The district court sided with Minnesota, but then the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed that decision and ruled for the new party. And that is when it landed in the Supreme Court. High stakes.
Traumatic. So how did the Supreme Court tackle this? Lots of complex legal reasoning, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is where it gets interesting. The court applied the Anderson Burdick test. And this test, it weighs the burden a law places on constitutional rights against the state's interest in enacting that law. They're trying to find balance.
Okay, so break it down. How does this test work?
So in this case, the court decided that the burden on the new party, because of Minnesota's law, was minor. And this is important because it meant Minnesota didn't have to prove a compelling state interest, that really strict standard. They just had to show their law served legitimate goals.
Hold on. Why was it considered minor, though? It seems pretty significant if they can't even have their name next to their candidate.
Good question. The court reasoned that the new party still had other ways to express their support for Dawkins. So they could endorse him, campaign for him, and speak out for his candidacy. They just couldn't have that formal listing on the ballot.
So, like, they could be part of the campaign, just not officially on the ballot? I could see why that would be frustrating for a smaller party trying to, you know, get some visibility.
Yeah, exactly. And it's this very point that sparked a lot of debate among the justices.
Okay, so let's hear what the majority opinion had to say. Who wrote it?
That was Chief Justice Rehnquist. He sided with Minnesota, arguing that, yes, while there's some burden on the new party's rights, it's outweighed by the state's interest in, you know, preventing voter confusion, overcrowded ballots, and too much party splintering.
Interesting. So it sounds like the court was putting a lot of emphasis on having a stable and manageable election process, even if it's harder for smaller parties.
That's a good way to put it. And Rehnquist actually said, and I quote, "The Constitution permits Minnesota to decide that political stability is best served through a healthy two-party system."
Whoa, that's a big statement. It almost sounds like he's saying the two-party system is inherently preferable, even if it limits other voices. I bet the dissenting justices had something to say about that.
Oh, absolutely. That's where things get interesting. Justices Stevens, Ginsburg, and Souter wrote some really strong dissents. And they argued that this decision basically gives states a free pass to stifle political competition.
Oh, I love a good dissenting opinion. Tell me more. What were their main points?
Well, Justice Stevens, for example, he directly challenged the idea that the burden on the new party was minor, right? He called it severe, arguing that banning fusion candidacies would basically strangle smaller parties and prevent them from sharing their values with voters.
So he's basically saying the court's underestimating the impact this has on political diversity.
Exactly. And he also took issue with the whole voter confusion argument. He called it patronizing, and he argued that voters can understand a ballot with multiple party affiliations next to a name.
I'm with him on that. It does seem a bit condescending, like voters need to be protected from too much information.
Right. And then Justice Sotomayor, he had his own concerns. He was wary of the majority's sort of implicit endorsement of the two-party system. Like, he argued that if a state's going to enact laws that benefit the two major parties and hurt the smaller ones, then they need to clearly justify that decision.
So he's saying, like, if you're going to tilt the playing field, at least be upfront about it. This case is really heating up. I want to hear more about these dissenting opinions and how Timmons has shaped the political landscape, you know, in the years since. But looks like we're out of time for part one. Don't worry, though. We'll be back soon with part two to continue this deep dive.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Timmons v. Twin Cities Area New Party. You know, before the break, we were talking about those dissenting opinions and how they were concerned about the majority's stance on the two-party system.
Yeah, they really made a strong case for this case being about way more than just one election law, right? Like, they were worried about threats to political diversity and just fairness in general.
Absolutely. And so that brings us to the impact of Timmons. Like, what happened after the Supreme Court's decision? Did it just fade away or did it have ripple effects?
I'm going to guess it didn't just disappear. These cases often set precedents that shape future legal battles.
You're right, you're right. Timmons really gave states a lot of power to regulate their own elections, even if those rules make it harder for smaller parties or independent candidates to compete.
Okay, but how much power are we talking about? Can states basically make any rules they want, even if they favor the two big parties?
It's a question a lot of people have, you know. The main takeaway from Timmons is that the burden of proof is really on the side challenging those election laws. They have to show that the burden on their rights is severe to get stricter scrutiny from the courts.
So it's like Timmons made it harder to prove that state election laws are unfair. Did this lead to a bunch of new state laws that target minor parties?
Well, it's hard to say for sure if Timmons directly caused that, but it did create a legal environment where those laws could probably survive challenges more easily. And remember, we're not just talking about fusion candidacies, right? Timmons has come up in cases about all sorts of election stuff, from ballot access to campaign finance rules.
So one case had a big impact on American politics. It shows how these technical legal rulings have these huge consequences for our democracy.
Definitely, and it shows why it's so important to understand the details of election law, how those laws can really shape who has power in politics.
Now, I want to go back to the majority's argument in Timmons about preventing voter confusion. They said that allowing fusion candidacies would overcomplicate ballots and maybe lead to voters making, you know, uninformed choices. What do you think about that?
It's an argument that comes up all the time in these debates, and it's tough, right? Because you want the voting process to be easy and clear for everyone. But then there's the worry that making things too simple could limit voters' choices.
Yeah, like a balancing act, right? Mm-hmm. Making the ballot easy to use,
yeah,
but also not so simple that it blocks some voices or viewpoints.
Exactly. And it's worth asking, how confused are voters, really? Are we really going to get so confused by a few extra party labels that we can't make a good decision?
I think voters are smarter than that. I mean, we deal with complex choices all the time in life. We can figure out who to vote for, even with different party names on the ballot.
I agree. And remember Justice Stevens saying something similar in his dissent, right? He said the whole voter confusion idea was kind of insulting. Like, it didn't give voters enough credit.
It's like, we need to be protected from too much information or something. Like, we can't handle a diverse political system.
Right. And it makes you think about the role of information and access in a democracy. Is it about making voting as simple as possible, even if it means fewer choices? Or is there something good about keeping things a little complex so voters can consider a wider range of ideas and viewpoints?
Those are some big questions, and it doesn't sound like there's an easy answer. Where do you stand on this? Do you think we're oversimplifying elections too much and losing that political diversity?
It's a tough one. Timmons makes us think about that, you know? It shows the tension between smooth elections and protecting free speech and political diversity.
So it's not just about one ballot. It's about our whole democracy.
Exactly. And that's a hard balance to find. Timmons reminds us that these aren't just like theoretical debates. They have a real impact on how our political system works and who gets to be a part of it.
This deep dive has been so interesting. It's making me look at election law in a whole new way. Like, it's not just rules and procedures. It's about power, representation, you know, what it means to be in a democracy.
I agree. And that's what these deep dives are all about, peeling back the layers of these complex issues to find those deeper meanings.
Well said. But hold on, we're not done yet. We need to unpack another important part of Timmons before we finish this deep dive.
There's more. I'm all ears.
Yeah, but we've got to save that for part three. Stay tuned, everyone. And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Timmins v. Twin Cities Area New Party. Last time we were talking about, like, you know, the big picture of this case and how it brings up all these questions about balancing a smooth election process with free speech and different political opinions.
Exactly. And we were about to get into this other part of Timmins that doesn't always get talked about when we talk about voter confusion and getting on the ballot.
Oh, okay. I'm curious. What's that?
It has to do with something Chief Justice Rehnquist said in his majority opinion. He wrote that the ballot is not a forum for sending particularized messages. Like, that's a direct quote.
Hmm. That's interesting. I feel like he's drawing a line between, you know, what the ballot is for and what he sees as, like, political expression.
Right. Yeah. And that difference is really important for understanding the whole impact of Timmins. It makes you think about, like, how we see the ballot. Is it just for picking a candidate the easiest way possible? Or is it a place where voters should see all kinds of political ideas, even ones that challenge the way things are?
I see what you mean. Rehnquist seems to be saying the ballot has a pretty limited purpose, like just vote and go. Don't try to make a statement with your vote.
Exactly. And if you believe in third parties, you know, or independent candidates or any politics that isn't part of the two big parties, this can sound pretty dismissive. They might say, hey, limiting what the ballot can say actually hurts our democracy.
Yeah, it's like only certain political speech is allowed. And if you have different views, you should just be quiet. Doesn't seem very democratic, does it?
Right. And this tension between how elections work and free speech is still going on today in these debates about election laws. So on the one hand, you've got people who want things to be efficient and organized, a very clear process, right? They'd say that too much political expression on the ballot just confuses things and makes it hard to see who can actually win.
So basically, keep the ballot simple. Just focus on picking the winners, not these small political issues.
Right. But then you have the other side, who say a good democracy needs a more open ballot, even if it's more complicated. They argue that seeing different political views is good for voters, even if those views are unusual or controversial.
I kind of agree with that. I think hearing more voices makes our conversations about politics better. And you never know, maybe those less popular ideas will actually connect with more people than we think.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it shows what can go wrong when we focus too much on keeping things stable and predictable in politics. If we're too quick to shut down ideas that don't fit the two-party system, we might miss out on some good ideas and solutions.
So Timmins is like a warning, right? It shows that even these small election laws can have a big impact on how our democracy works and who gets a say in it.
That's it, exactly. And it shows why we need to really think about these questions. How do we balance making elections work well with protecting free speech and having a variety of political voices?
This has been such an interesting deep dive. I feel like I understand Timmins v. Twin Cities Area New Party in a much deeper way now, and how important it is for American politics. It's amazing how much one legal case can affect things.
I'm glad to hear that. That's the whole point of these deep dives, you know, to take these complex issues and find what they really mean.
Well said. So before we wrap up, one last thing for our listeners to think about. We talked about the legal stuff, the disagreements, the impact of Timmins, but here's the real question. If you were a Supreme Court justice deciding this case, what would you do? Would you go with the majority, like, you know, focus on the two-party system and a simple ballot? Or would you side with a dissent and say the ballot can express more, even if it gets a bit messy? There's no easy answer, and that's what makes these deep dives so great. They make us really think about the values of our democracy and the choices we make. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and keep thinking about these big questions.